Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Merrick Larwood.
Hello, film lovers and podcast listeners. Welcome to this film podcast. What are you supposed to say? I was trying to work to make people want to listen more at the start.
Well, they're already listening. I think probably you sort of get on with it, isn't it? I mean, do people just dip into a podcast for the first 30 seconds and go, no, it's not for me?
I do, yeah.
Do you?
We're going to... What happens is we each review a film that we've seen, a sort of brief summary, chat about it. We read some letters in the middle.
Yeah.
And then generally talk bollocks. That's what you're going to be listening to.
Yeah. Hopefully. Fingers crossed you carry on.
That was the contents page for the film.
That is. And there'll also be... We'll be holding up some glossy exclusive photos during the podcast, but you might not be able to see those.
So... The cinema, I had my nephew staying.
Yeah.
So I had to go and take him to see a 15.
How old is he?
He's 16, but he looks 15.
All right. You take him to films he looks like he's the age for.
Yeah. It's okay. Still expensive. I think the prices for... When I was 16, I thought I was an adult. But now looking back at 16-year-old, I think these people are children. It should be child prices up until you're 18.
That'd be fair. Were you paying for him then? Like an uncle would.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Really expensive. I've even the travel cards, travelling, I'm going to moan, but on the tube,
yeah.
At 16, you've got to pay adult prices. Mm. But minimum wage is much less. Minimum wage for a 16-year-old is £3.72 an hour, which they get paid.
So they have to pay full price cinema tickets, but they're not allowed to earn the same money. It's a disgrace.
What is going on with this bloody country?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a separate issue. So I took him... I wanted to go and see the Babadook, but for some reason, I live in Muswell Hill, which is in North London, and I'm now lucky enough to have two cinemas, which is the Crouch End Art House Cinema, which is nice, and the Muswell Hill Odeon, which has got a brilliant... It's got an amazing screen one.
Yeah.
But screen two and screen three are sort of smaller converted screens, and there's a slight bleed from the screen one.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah. And that in the background is Buddy the dog for non-regular listeners.
Who today is a bit sleepy, if you're following along in the sticker book. There was the Odeon in Edinburgh decided, when I lived in Edinburgh, decided that their screen one was far too big, and so they turned the balcony into a separate screen.
But
it just meant the bleed through when you were sitting beneath the balcony in the other screen was really loud.
Terrible.
Terrible idea. So what did you go and see with your cousin?
Nephew. We went to see Fury.
The Brad Pitt tank film.
Yes, that's pretty much it. It's set in the Second World War, at the end of the Second World War, where a group, Brad Pitt is the captain on a tank, whatever you call it, an American tank, and his crew, I'm not using the wrong words, have come up all the way through North Africa,
yeah.
All the way through France. It's the last days of the war, and Germany's in disarray, everyone's fighting, and it's still, you think it's finished, but someone's got to finish this blooming war.
Yeah.
And it's blooming Brad Pitt and his mates.
Yeah, now, I didn't want to go see this film for one simple reason, and that's Shia LaBeouf's in it.
Is it Shia or Shia LaBeouf?
I don't care.
And he just does things to make himself look like a villain, doesn't he?
He's becoming sort of Mr. Punchable Face, isn't he?
But is that purely intentional or not?
Who knows? I mean, he's just...
So, yes, you might... Also, so the story is... basically, it's, I don't really like this. It's a new kid comes along, someone dies in their tank, and you follow the
rookie
journey.
The rookie.
It's that rookie story.
So they can explain to the rookie what's happening at every stage.
And I just think I hate that.
You don't like that?
Trope, is it called a trope?
It's a trope, that's a trope.
So I just thought I'd seen that before. It reminded me, it's very brutal and it's very bleak. It's sort of a more bleak Saving Private Ryan.
And
if this had come out 10 years ago, you'd find, you know, when Saving Private Ryan came out and the scenes on the beaches and everyone was shocking by the how graphic and the gore of it, and a lot of veterans, so they couldn't watch it because it was so accurate portrayal of what happened on the actual day. I think it's like that. It's just remember the old war, black and white war films where you wouldn't really see the deaths, it'd just be like a German falling over and dying, and it would be quite romanticised.
It's basically filmed theatre, wasn't it?
It's a brutal side with some horrific sort of explosions and bits of meat flying everywhere. So if you don't really like gory, brutal films, I'd stay away from this. I was surprised because I was looking at IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and it's been reviewed really highly. And apparently it's done quite well at the box office.
Mm.
I'm quite surprised. I think it's just a slightly less charming Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. But the combination of Brad Pitt's face and a tank seems to be enough for people to give it a go.
He's actually very good in it, and he's not annoying.
Is he? Okay.
Which is surprising. It's got Michael Pena in it, who's in the he was in that police film.
I love that film.
Sorry, I'm a bit poorly today, so I don't really know what's going on. He was in Gangster Squad. What's the one he did with the well, there's two police officers, and it's him and Jake Gyllenhaal. End of Watch, which is quite interesting film.
Is that any
film.
Good?
He's an Eastbound and Down as well. He's
he's a
go-to Mexican guy.
Mexican-looking chap. Handsome Mexican man. Logan Lerman's in it as well, isn't he?
Logan Lerman, he plays the young rookie kid with a sort of, pretty boy face.
Who becomes a man during this, presumably.
Like we all do during war.
Yeah.
I felt like I hope my nephew became more of a man watching the film.
Or watching you watch it.
He's watching me.
This is how an adult watches a film.
I bought some popcorn for it. It's one of those films where you think I feel quite guilty eating popcorn while a lot of people are getting blown.
It was hard for them in the war, wasn't it?
Too much salted in this and not enough sweet. There are some brilliant scenes in there, and I suppose it's got that. It's unique in the fact it's a tank film. So if you liked,
is it very claustrophobic? Is that the idea they're getting?
No, it's not got the claustrophobia of Das Boot.
Das Boot,
which is amazing.
Yes,
it's not as great as that, and I don't think it really handles a claustrophobia. And this, you know,
I suppose you can, if there's no enemies around, you can get out of your tank, can't you? I mean, sit on the top, maybe have a cigarette.
If you've been to the Imperial War Museum and seen inside the tanks, it's actually terrifying how horrific it is.
Yeah.
And I read stories about war veterans, and because of the explosions would echo and the bullet, the noise, a lot of them would have earphones in their ears. They got hit by...
Basically sitting in a massive bin, aren't you?
And it gets hit by a huge explosion. You have huge... It's,
eardrum issue, tinnitus all the time,
and there wasn't any reference to that, and I thought that would be one of the main things. So I read lots of accounts. I remember what I was doing, some sort of, when I was doing my degree, I did some sort of war things written by war veterans, and read loads of stories. Right. And a lot of them would say that in these stories they recount the fact that they
tinnitus. Well, they used that in Saving Private Ryan in the beach scene, didn't they?
And I don't think it really had that effect. You can't, when you're near an explosion, you can't hear what's going on.
Well, it's actually been done a lot since Saving Private Ryan. I think the Hurt Locker does it as well, and because it's accurate, but it's also dramatic. So maybe they just didn't want to repeat a trope that has become quite common now. But Brad Pitt's bought the tank himself.
Why?
To have in his garden. Because he got to know it so well.
I think they're really good friends, Shia LaBeouf and Brad Pitt. And I read as well.
I heard Shia LaBeouf got so into character that he refused to wash, and that pissed off some of the other actors.
What a bell end!
Yeah, I mean, I just keep hearing these stories.
I mean, do I go and watch this film? It's got an odd scene. It's got a few odd scenes where you've got the quiet moments where they try and be civilized again.
Yeah.
The acting's very good. I didn't particularly, I'm going to go back to the old thing I was banging on about, I didn't particularly like any of the characters, didn't warm to them. And it's supposed to be about how war changes your values and changes the man psychologically. So you're no longer someone who, your appreciation of life and death has gone, you're changed your whole value system.
So it's a positive thing, yeah? It's how war is a positive thing.
Yeah, and but it's,
I don't think that's,
it's true in some ways, but it's cliched in other ways, and you almost know what's going to happen, the outcome of the film.
Because I've read some war veterans' sort of comments on it.
Oh, did you? What did they say?
I only briefly skimmed it, because then I stopped because I didn't want to spoil the film if I went to see it, you know. But the general gist seemed to be, you know, it is very accurate what it was like, but this still doesn't really get close to the actual horrors of war.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you will always be watching an entertainment. I mean, what's people's accounts of war over the centuries? It seems to be, you know, soldiers 100 year on 100 years is mostly the monotony and boredom of it. Of it's just nothing, 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 and then suddenly all your friends die, and then you have to try and cope with that whilst you don't know when the next thing will happen.
Yeah.
And it's a huge psychological battle, more than anything else. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, Blackadder Goes Forth probably came closest to that in terms of the actual pattern of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was you could say that end of Blackadder Goes Forth, because you knew all the characters and you knew their backstory. It's a simple thing about going over the top was so horrific and so moving.
Yes, and there's no will they win, you know. It's just, no, this is lunacy. Yeah.
I didn't especially enjoy it. I thought it was done well. It was shot well. It was brutal, had a sort of certain feel to it. But as a piece of entertainment, I didn't walk away thinking, I've really learnt something.
How was Brad Pitt in it?
He was all right.
Because
he's not.
I found him recently to have the sort of swagger of a man who shouldn't really be there, has perhaps paid for this, or has perhaps been brought in because he's box office, rather than he's right for the role. I thought his role in 12 Years a Slave, which he was a producer on, and he plays the hero who saves him, at least, I found it weirdly disconnected to the actual piece.
He looks quite odd now because he's lost his good looks. He looks a bit like a Mormon, sort of odd.
Yeah,
you know, he's sort of changing into an old man, so he's going for an odd phase. He must be about 50 though. But if you want to see an original war film, which Brad Pitt is amazing in, watch Inglourious Basterds, which I love, because he's almost playing that. It almost suits his style of not being the greatest actor, but being able to do comedy.
Yeah, but I think that I really like Inglourious Basterds, but I do think that his bits are actually the weakest part of the film.
I love some bits of it.
Really?
It's almost playing on the fact when they...
Not because of him, it's that bit of the story I feel is the weakest part of the story.
I love the bit. I'm sorry, spoilers here if you haven't seen Inglourious Basterds, when they're all posing as Italian film directors.
And you love that bit.
They're trying to act like they're Italian. They can't.
It's
always the play on the fact that Brad Pitt couldn't do it anyway.
No, it works. It does work, and I really like it. But I almost feel sorry for the poor French actress who's doing fantastic work making this emotionally real. And then there's the Yanks downstairs in the lobby doing some kind of Inspector Clouseau routine. Like, it works weirdly, but I don't know why it works.
Because it's just brilliant scenes. It's a compilation of brilliant scenes.
That's it. You don't stop enjoying it, so it doesn't matter.
And interesting stories. I think the fundamental flaw in this is you just know it's a group of people in a tank going towards, there's going to be some climax at the end.
Yeah.
You sort of know what's going to happen.
Right.
There's no challenge, there's no bit where you think,
and it's not based on a true story.
And that's the thing. It hasn't even got that back.
I mean, there must be so many good true stories.
Yeah, I thought this must be based on a true story because the story's not that interesting.
Well, the success of, some could argue, the first big budget HBO style, because it is now a genre, TV series, was Band of Brothers, which had enormous cast, huge budget, Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks financing it, and because it was based on a true story, you never knew which characters would survive. They weren't going to survive because they were the principal characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was based on real life. And that made it exciting again. But it sounds like they've gone back to the old formula of, well, the rookie hero is learning and there's his mentor, so he'll probably die at the end of Act 2. And then, you know, all of that stuff.
I'm not going to say anything. Yeah. But I mean,
his friend will die at the end of Act 2. And then he'll have to step up to become the adult. And, you know, we've seen it, right?
I think there's no need to go and watch this film.
Okay. Do they save a cat at any point?
There's no saving cat, but I think there's some interesting.
Do they kill a dog?
I think that lots of things got killed, and I'm sure there's a dog in the background somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll give it 7 Mareks purely because it was made really well, and I think there's a couple of really new sort of tank fighting scenes which are quite entertaining.
Now you've put my interest right at the end there. New tanks.
Well, you don't normally see tank fights, good tank fights in.
They're quite slow, aren't they?
But this is really good.
Good fights on a tank, like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. That's a good fight
tanks,
on a tank.
Tanks against tanks in fights.
No, that does sound good.
If you like a bit of tanks against tanks.
I love a bit of tanks against tanks.
There should have been more
of that. It's very tense.
There should have been more of that, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I tell you what. This isn't just about what we think about films. It's about what other people, our sparse global listeners.
Yes. 3 in each continent, I think we're up to.
How, if I'm listening now,
yes,
I've got through this first bit.
Well done.
And I want to contribute somehow by writing.
Well, dear listener, you can write to us, email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com. And then maybe if you're lucky, or we remember, we'll read your letter out, as we're about to with these things. Or if you want to just talk to one another, you can go to facebook.com/filmfandango and post things you think people might want to see. Or tweet us @filmfandango, @MrDavidReed, or @MarekLarwood.
He's asked me to read this out. And he said, if I read this out in a terrible Jamaican accent, I'm probably not that far off.
Oh boy. Okay.
We got
Buchan.
Cool Runnings.
That's it.
That's how you get into it. You say cool.
I saw that film twice in the cinema. I saw it in the cinema and I didn't really want to. I enjoyed it, but then as a surprise treat for our class, because we'd been so good all year, 2 days later, our tutor took us to see Cool Runnings in the cinema, and it was the only treat they ever gave us.
And as a result, it's been on television every third day for the past 100 years.
Feel the rhythm. Feel the ride.
Hear the letter now. Dear Mark David and Buddy, my name is Miguel Conago, and I'm writing to you from an island in the Caribbean. It don't matter which one, they is all terrible for watching movies. I've decided to start a Twitter account to review films. I'm going a bit weird now.
It's alright.
@OneFrame Reviews, and the one is a one.
Okay.
It exactly as it sound. I take one frame from the film, post the image and give it rating out of 10. I'm not reviewing the film, just the frame. It's pointless, but knowing the internet it may catch on. Currently the only person who follows me is Davis Vecchio. You may know him as the man who assaulted Chloe Grace Moretz in a toilet in the film Hick. I would appreciate if, as well as reading this out, you could let me know which film you would both like me to review.
It's going well.
Yeah, in one frame. And is there a film which has a perfect frame? Your insight is always exceptional. I think he's probably talking about another podcast. Now, the first time I read this, I thought it was something else.
You thought it was one frame of a movie as a review of the whole film.
I think that's a better idea.
Yeah, maybe you should do that instead.
I like to do that. I really like your idea. If you look on it, he's taken some on one frame reviews on Twitter. I think some stuff from Howard the Duck and some other films on there. But surely, one frame to review the whole film would be a really good idea.
So, you know, a really jubilant Nicolas Cage if you really like the film, or him weeping if you really don't.
Oh, I thought it'd be... So I was thinking of this, if I could take one frame from a film...
Yes.
And that would be sum up the whole film.
Okay, so if I gave you The Godfather, what would you conjure up to sum up the whole film?
It would have to be...
a toilet cistern with a gun behind it, right?
It's really hard because they normally pick it for the poster.
Yeah,
and I think it's Michael Corleone staring into the distance is that moment, and he's so, his face was so brilliant, him just looking and realising what he has to do. I think perfect frames from films, I think the only one I could think of was Alien 3, of spoilers, of Ripley jumping off as the alien bursts out of her stomach. And that must be sum up the whole...
There's a, the amazing thing that Steven Soderbergh did on a blog, which was he posted Raiders of the Lost Ark in black and white with the music taken off for the purpose of seeing the frames as photographs. It, you know, you're not distracted by the colour so much, or what the music is doing to you, because the music is so, you know, affecting. And you realise how every single shot is so well composed. It is telling the story. You don't need a single line of dialogue to know exactly what is happening between every character and what is going on. And it's well worth Googling to find it, because it's fascinating. In terms of, you don't need the back and forth between Satipo and Indy, because you get what's happening just with the choreography, and the same with Belloc and everyone else. And it's visual storytelling, and then the music and the dialogue just add more on top of that. And so many films aren't like that. If you watched it, you would get bored if you didn't have the music go, you know, this guy, I don't know what's happening.
I watched it in Blade Runner again the other day. I was just amazed, and I watched watched Aliens, which is not Ridley Scott, it's
James Cameron,
in Blade Runner, all the shots are so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was Ridley Scott's.
I mean, what would you have
thing.
From? What would you have from? From there's so many.
I would have maybe Rutger Hauer in the rain holding a dove.
Yeah, might have that one. I quite like him in the rain eating his noodles at the start.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the image that's been copied in every dystopian sci-fi since then, isn't it?
What frames would you have of Jaws? Would you have Brody shooting the gun, or would you have him on the beach with the binoculars looking?
Oh, the anticipation.
Yeah.
Or Quint's face is looking sort of furious. My God, what's he seen?
It's hard to get one frame, because they've often been picked like a Psycho. You think they have
the image the iconic have. Frame you picture, isn't it?
Is that the right one?
I like this.
Because Psycho is quite interesting, because it's all about the Janet Leigh gets. And there are spoilers here, but I'm assuming we've all seen this. As we've been talked about enough, and there's only two even say spoilers. Everyone talks about Janet Leigh and her being killed off in the first bit.
Yes.
And the whole the great detective bit, and his, when the sister comes up, that's not really ever mentioned, is it?
No.
And I always think a bit when he's walking up the stairs, it's quite oddly terrifying.
Or it's the figure in the window, maybe, for Psycho.
Yeah.
The rocking chair figure.
Or I might even have... Isn't he got that stuffed when he's at the reception talking to Janet Leigh, and you've got that stuffed, is it a stuffed owl or something in the background, or a stuffed bird?
You have to remember, I've only seen the remake, so...
Oh, you haven't seen it? I can't believe this. You must address this.
I have seen the shot-for-shot remake, though, so I can't talk about it.
You must address this. Oh, really missing out.
I will see it. It's, you know, the two black and white films, I think, on the top of my to-do list, are Psycho and Vertigo, because I've not seen either of them.
Vertigo's not black and white.
Is it not?
No.
I've only seen the DVD cover.
That's not my favourite.
It was for a while making it to the number one slot in the top 100 films in certain lists.
Really?
Yeah. For a brief period it beat, I think in the States actually, it beat The Third Man, you know, and Citizen Kane up there.
Frenzy. You must watch Frenzy.
You've said Hitchcock. Frenzy. I love it. I would watch it.
So, let's talk about what is one frame thing. Let's talk about some films. Like The Untouchables. What frame would you use? Would it be from The Staircase?
What frame would you review?
What frame would you... we're changing this. I'm sorry, Miguel. What frame sums up the whole film?
The stairs? It's got to be the stair scene, right?
Yeah.
The pram on the stairs.
Yeah. Or maybe that shot where... Al Capone's just bludgeoning the guy with a baseball bat. It's a fun game.
It's a fun game.
And you can play it at home. If you've got friends, you can play it with them. Or you can just talk to yourself, which is what we'll all be doing in the future.
Make little model Mareks and Davids out of your own hair and feces and just talk to them.
Well, the great thing about making a model of me is you don't need hair, you can just use feces.
That is a great thing.
In fact, you don't need to do anything to your feces.
Just set us up on the other side of the room and just set the podcast going and you can imagine we're there with you.
And we'll leave a space now for here's, you can talk about your frame that you'd like to use right now.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, good.
I'm not sure.
Yes, we don't like you anymore.
There we go, so very interactive.
There you go.
It's Halloween, isn't it?
It is Halloween, I suppose.
I tried to go and see the Babadook.
We talked briefly about seeing horror films, but as Marek's explained, the Babadook we've not been able to see. I do want to go see it, though, so maybe for a future podcast, I don't know. It looks interesting anyway, people. If you don't know about the Babadook, it's an Australian horror film that people have been saying is very good, but hasn't got a full general release for some reason, presumably because it's a small indie or something. But we will catch it. If you've seen it, do email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, and let us know if it's any good. So I caught up with a film that I've wanted to see for a while just because it seemed intriguing.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a film called The Mist.
I've seen this film.
You've seen it? The one where they're in a shopping mall.
Isn't it written by the same bloke who wrote Shawshank Redemption?
Yes, Stephen King.
No, directed by the same bloke, I mean. Frank.
Well, this is interesting. Yes, it is. It's directed by the guy who did both Shawshank and The Green Mile.
Frank Darabont. What was his name?
His name is...
Frank Darabont.
Darabont. He seems to only do Stephen King adaptations.
I mean, The Green Mile is basically trying to be the Shawshank Redemption, but a bit more...
It's Stephen King again. But this is based on a Stephen King novel, and it's about a mist that comes down from the mountains one day and just fills a town. And people are stuck in a supermarket, basically, with the big glass-fronted windows. And they don't know what to do, and then somebody covered in blood comes into the supermarket saying, "There are things in the mist. They took him.
It's a bit like, if you know H.P. Lovecraft, it's very like Cthulhu-ish.
Yeah, it's got sort of...
All the monsters are the same sort of design, aren't they?
Really? Well, there's a... Not to spoiler it too much, but there's not just one thing in the mist. But I actually it knows what it is, this film, and I'm glad I saw it. It's got an ensemble cast that's quite fun if you like movies. So Toby Davis is in this, who's great. I really like him. Toby Jones, William Sadler, who is fun in lots of different things, but I have great affection for him from being the Grim Reaper in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Yeah.
And he plays a sort of crazy hick in this. But and then the lead is played by Thomas Jane, who was the Punisher in the god-awful Punisher film and then fell out with them and didn't get cast in the sequel.
I watched this years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I've got I looked at my IMDb rating for it. And I've given it a 2.
Really?
I remember I thought it was terrible. I thought it was a terrible B-movie. And I thought it was
I think it's a fun Stephen King movie, is exactly
but
what it
with
is.
With one of the most horrifying endings to a
the
film.
The ending is absolutely grim.
Which seems so out of context. The film...
And I agree with you, I think it does. I don't want to spoil the ending for people, but I do think it does. And that was the one point that the director said, if you don't let me keep the ending I've thought of, then I'm not going to do it. And so they said, yes, okay. That was his one sticking point. He was going, this is what we should do. And Stephen King said, yeah, I wish I'd thought of it for the novel originally.
But the ending was... It feels like a rubbish B-movie. It's half comic.
It becomes a monster movie. But I think what is fun about it is... it knows what it is. In the main character...
He knows it's rubbish.
No, it doesn't. The main character, his job at the beginning is he paints movie posters. That's his for a living, like the properly hand painted ones rather than, you know, just Photoshop ones. And on his wall of his portfolio of work is the poster for The Thing right at the beginning. I think it's the first shot. So it knows its heritage. Like John Carpenter's The Thing is sort of the best crazy monster that is lots of different things, but it's stalking these people.
I watched The Thing. I'll talk about that, John.
Yeah. And also there are huge similarities between this and John Carpenter's The Fog, which I think was sort of based on Stephen King's novel anyway. But I really enjoyed it. The end, I thought, was just like, whatever. But once it got into its whole monsters thing and the greater threat being human beings who are afraid, like, they become almost more terrifying than the monsters. I really like that whole storytelling.
So they're stuck in the mall, and they're trying to get out to their cars, but they can't because they're even getting killed by monsters.
Yes.
And some monsters come into the mall as well, don't
they? Well, the apparently the whole inspiration for the story itself was when Stephen King was in a supermarket and saw that the entire front of the building was made of glass. And he was like, what if you had to defend yourself in here? What would you do? Because it's just all glass. And it's that's the basis of the fear. So the mist is just so you can't see it coming.
So all people designing your trendy modern houses that are all made of glass.
Yeah.
When Cthulhu rises and the demons come, then your house is going to... It may look nice for a nice sunny day.
Did the Three Little Pigs teach you nothing?
Yes, exactamundo.
Yeah. No glass houses, no chimneys.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. No, I did enjoy this film. It is a B movie. You're exactly right. That is exactly what it is. And it's but I thought it was a really fun one. And I thought it was genuinely tense as well. It's if you like schlocky horror films, then this is one of the better ones, I think. It's not a genre changer, you know. It's, you know, like the likes of The Shining or Halloween, which have been influenced so many other things. But I do think this is a good one. It's certainly better than Silent Hill or any of these sort of...
Yeah, it got recommended to me ages and ages ago, maybe. But well, 2007, it came out quite a while ago.
Yeah.
I think I thought it was rubbish.
Are you a horror fan, though?
Yeah, well, I good films. I don't think necessarily... as a whole horror genre, I think that when you start talking about it as... just going through the motions of a horror film is boring. Like The Thing, for example, my nephew came, as I talked about, came to stay.
Yes.
And he's got Netflix. So I'm sort of telling him all these great films you can watch.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been taping, as my career is going down here, I've become increasingly poor. I've started just recording all the classics off on Film 4 and seeing what's on beforehand, right, and then taping them all. So like, The Thing was on, so I recorded that, and I said, "Well, you've got." I said, "Have you seen The Thing?" He said, "I've seen the first bit, so we've got to watch The Thing." So we watched The Thing when we came back from watching Fury.
And what did he think?
He thought it was brilliant, and you know what? It stands up.
Oh, it's
and
he fantastic!
Said, and he said, as a 16-year-old, when was this made? The special effects in this are much better than special effects now, because he, you know, I mean, he's been
well. He won't have seen much stop motion animation,
and he was amazing. So. And it just stands up as a film. That's
interesting, actually.
It's so tense.
Kids brought up on CG.
Yeah.
Whether stop motion stuff that's actually there will feel more visceral to them now that they've been so oversaturated with the swishy computer.
I just think it's the way that you cannot replicate the way that light hits something.
Yeah.
And putting the technology's not there yet. And even we talked about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, where something looked amazing, but it's still computer graphics.
Yeah. Well, even this the thing
in 1982. I'm talking about the 1982 Kurt Russell thing.
Yes, the remake before the remake of that remake.
So it's 32 years old, and it's still better. Then it's incredible, the stuff in that film.
But there is something. I mean, we just sound like old people banging on about it. There are CG augmented films that are good. I'm going to put that out there. But I mean, I've got a soft spot for old practical effects because I love films, and I don't think anyone who loves films cannot you know look at Jason and the Argonauts, the, you know, Ray Harryhausen stuff, and not love those skeletons. I think that is sort of part of why we love it. But the idea of casting an actor who doesn't have a hand just so that you can, at some point in the movie, have his hand bitten off by an animated ribcage.
Yeah.
And there are things that an animator wouldn't think to do in the ripping of the cloth and everything from that. You've just done it. And... That is it. There are no accidents in a CG created environment. Yeah. You know, there's no shots in Pixar where they go, "Oh, we lucked out there, didn't we?" With that perfect that perfect change of the sunlight at that point when that person walks out, because it's all controllable.
But the thing, I think the thing is one of the perfect movies. It's in my top. I think plot wise, it's so tight.
Yeah,
and there's always something different happening, and it's a bottle episode, but you've got.
What do you think is the truth of it at the end? Because it's got the ambiguous, as lots of people say, but John Carpenter says it isn't ambiguous at all. But the ambiguous ending with the two of them there.
I think it's
32 years old. Are we not allowed
to... spoilers here, because if you haven't watched the thing, and we're spoiled, you must go and watch...
Yeah.
It's a great Halloween film. I think they're both all right.
Okay. That's not what John Carpenter thinks, but...
Well, he thinks that
MacReady clearly is breathing, because you can see his breath
in the cold
very accurately. And the other guy, whose name I forget, the character's name, anyway, there's nothing coming out of his mouth at all.
Really?
And it's very intentional from John Carpenter to have done that. And the implication is that MacReady's the only human left.
I just think it's a wonderful film.
Yeah, it is great. It is great. The Mist is not the thing. That's what I'm saying. The thing, you know, did things we've not seen before.
Just watch The Thing twice rather than...
But if you're looking for a new film, a new horror film for Halloween, then The Mist's all right, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And it's got some great performances in it. I like the people in it.
So there we go. That's about it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
If you want to donate to help us make this podcast, it's really appreciated. You can do so on the website.
Yeah, Dear Film Fandango... No, that's completely wrong. Filmfandango.co.uk, and follow the link from there. And to everyone who's donated, thank you very much.
And what should we just say? Happy Halloween! Keep watching the films!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.